summer I'm working with the teaching program here at Holden Village, and one of the things I get to do is help us talk together. Partly I do that by, we made arrangements to have various teachers come, and one of the other ways we do it is by having these forums. So first I want to say something about Holden Forums and then something about tonight's topic. Holden Forums are designed, their purpose is to be an opportunity for the consolation of the saints, for us to learn from one another. We learn from one another's expertise and experience. We learn from one another's questions. We learn from one another's innovations and insights. So everyone's comments are welcome, and everyone's comments are heard. We don't necessarily all have to agree, but we do listen to each other. And the goal is not that we will go away having solved the world's problems or even the particular issue that we discuss in an evening, but with the hope that we will have learned something. And one of my particular goals is that we leave each time having heard someone say something that we'd like to follow up on with that person. And that leads then to another peculiarity of a Holden Forum, which is that it is closely timed. We go an hour knowing that the conversation is not over, but that the conversation is transferred to other places, whether that's at coffee break or sitting on a porch or walking down the trail. The conversation goes on and we continue to learn from one another. One other thing I should say about what I will do as moderator is that I will tend to give preference to those who haven't spoken over those who have spoken as the evening continues. We'll begin by hearing comments from four people who you see before you. My favorite analogy for them is that they are the pump primers. They're the ones who are here to get the conversation going. They are not here to give you all the answers to life's questions. That's not to say that you can't follow up and ask them to clarify or expand on something, but rather to embolden you to make your own comments and to share your own wisdom and questions. So, that about Holden Forums in general. This about tonight's topic. This summer we've been exploring the theme water washed, spirit born. We found it to be a wonderfully generative theme as we consider how in our baptism the promise of resurrection into a new creation is given to us. And also that the Holy Spirit lifts us up out of that font to live what Dan Erlander called early in the summer odd lives. Lives that are out of sync with the old creation that is all around us. As we claim the promises of our baptism, we're pushed out into differentness, to be unlike what is around us. This is serious business. It's hard work not to be in sync, to be different, to be odd, to live immersed in the waters of our baptism. And consequently, I think maybe that's part of the reason Christians often get a reputation for being a little grim. Perhaps it's the humorlessness that all reformers are labeled with, but I think it may also be intensified by its religiousness. Certainly, Hans Nielsen Hauge, one of the important figures in Lutheran Pietism, founded groups of people who had this reputation. They went around having reformed lives, trying to reform society, and they stomped on their dram cups and broke up their hard-earned fiddles. And I think that a lot of them weren't much fun to be around. For as much as I'm very fond of the Pietist movement, I have to admit that. A different view of the relationship between joy and reform comes to us from Emma Goldman. You've all seen t-shirts with that quotation from her. If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution or part of the revolution. Or Marge Percy's poem, that I don't have a copy of here at Holden, in which she writes about the necessity in a social movement that's over the long haul of stopping to enjoy and relish the ordinary things like making soup together. Or Dorothy Day, I think of as someone who was serious, but who, as we read about her life, was also given to surprising moments of rejoicing and even extravagance. The notion of jubilee that we've been looking at this week requires that justice and joy go together. Those four different meanings of jubilee that some of you saw up on a banner in the dining hall for several days had both restoration of the land, proclamation of liberty, redistribution of means, and dancing. So it seems the question, can jubilee justice be jubilant, if it's biblical, must be answered yes. That's not much of a debate. Rather, we ask tonight, what are the practices that might make it happen, that we can be both just and jubilant in our lives? So these four people have agreed to talk to us, give us some ideas about how they strive in their lives, in their work, to be both just and joyous. And I think I'll let them each introduce themselves beyond their first names. So I think we'll go in this order: Dorothy, Michelle, Nancy, Eric. And with that, I turn it over to you.
I'm Dorothy Bass. I'm a church historian and somebody interested in spiritual formation, working in research on that. It seems to me, as I think about joy and jubilee, the thing that blocks joy in my life so often is not having time for it or for all the other things that I feel I must do. Time is the depressing pressure upon me, and I should say upon my spouse and our children. You know, it's a family with too many jobs and too many good things that we wish to do with and for one another and other people around us. One night, my husband and I were out to dinner with some friends, and we're all college professors, and we were saying that it was a Saturday night. Well, tomorrow, we're all churchgoers. We were going to go to church, but then I have 50 papers to grade, you know, a lecture to write. We're all going to spend the day doing grading papers, catching up. And it just hit me with it like a blow. You know, if we were all planning to go out tomorrow and spend the day committing adultery, you know, or bearing false witness, or taking the name of the Lord in vain, or, you know, just breaking other commandments, we wouldn't really be sitting here just kind of boasting about it, commiserating, and not even thinking that we should question ourselves on this. What about Sabbath keeping? What does it mean? What does it mean that remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy is one of the Ten Commandments, which we learn from earliest childhood in our faith. Now, and I decided to explore Sabbath keeping, and it's become a real kind of thing with me and a really important part of my own spiritual life. Did you know that in the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament, they appear twice, and the Sabbath commandments are different. All the rest of them are the same. But the Sabbath one is different in the two renderings. The first part's the same. Remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. You shouldn't work, neither should your servants, your animals, so on. Okay? On one day you shall rest. 6 days shall you work, on one day you shall rest. These are the same in both Exodus and Deuteronomy. But the reason why is different in the two places. In Exodus, it's because the Lord your God created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested, and therefore you shall rest. In other words, we're to rest because we are like God. We participate in God's work. Also, it's a way, one theologian has pointed out, God thought that what could be done in 6 days was just fine. Seriously, you know, and that the creatures that had been made were good enough, and we don't need to go on and make another one that's better. seriously, you know. So, I mean, there's a very deep spiritual truth in that. It's not just a law. It's a way of seeing ourselves in creation. And Deuteronomy, 6 days shall you work, on the seventh you shall rest, also your animals, your servants, and so on. Because you were slaves in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God led you out with a mighty hand. Therefore shall you rest. Slaves cannot rest. Slaves cannot take a day off. You are free now. You can. And not only you, but everyone with whom you have anything to do, the aliens in your land, your animals, you know, so on. God does not intend work without respite for humankind or for creation. Now, the law, you know, Christians have kind of a complicated relationship to the law, and having a law laid upon you that says you can't do anything on Sunday isn't really right. Luther says, anybody who says, makes a law of this, that you should rest, I command you to work. I command you to ride, rather than just make a law of it. On the other hand, there are at least 3 millennia of wisdom involved in thinking about what it means to proportion our work and our rest appropriately in the Jewish and Christian traditions. And to think that we can make up a better way out of our own inventiveness. Well, I know, how about if we do it this way? How about if we do it? I think we just don't have time to do a good job at that. You know, I don't have time to make up something better than what's been going on. And really, if you, as I think about it, 6 days of work, one of rest, that's pretty good. It's a lot of work. It values work. Jews at the beginning of Sabbath and at the end say thank you for our work. And we should hope in the society where so many people are overworked that those who are underworked and who do not have work long for work. So in the practice of Sabbath, I find a yearning for justice, for appropriate work for all people, for rest, a willingness to live with creation, to celebrate it, not to think that it must be always made somewhat better, altered, subdued, changed, and so on, but to live with it. What does it mean not to work on the Sabbath? In Jewish tradition, work is defined as changing nature, altering nature. That's why they don't want to match. That causes the transformation of the wood into ash. Okay, so don't work. Don't worry. There's an old Hasidic tale of a rabbi walking through the field, seeing his fences broken down on Sabbath. He saw it. He's finding himself thinking, okay, on Monday, I'm going to get the wood. I'm going to get the nails. I'm going to fix that right up. And at the end of Sabbath, he realized that because he had planned it on the Sabbath, he never fixed it. He left it that way. To say, this is okay. Let's not use up our Sabbath making lists of things to do. Okay? And there's just many, and the other thing that one does not do is commerce. I do not deal with money on Sunday, other than to put my offering in the plate. I do not enter a store. I do not look through catalogs. I do not do my tax returns. I do not balance my checkbook. That's not a day for that. And it feels good. And there are things that I have not bought because of it. they just don't buy them. And that simplifies things. It might live too consumerist as it is. And it really does feel free. It's not even to be thought about. And when you add to this, there's a long historical argument about the change from Saturday to Sunday in Sabbath keeping, which I don't need to go into here. But when you add to this, Sunday being the day of resurrection, which is celebrated in Eucharistic worship, I mean, we have creation, we have liberation, we have resurrection, and it's quite joyful, and it has a social import, and it's spiritually liberating, and there's a practice.
I'm Michelle Braley, and I quit my job a couple weeks ago to come to Holden, and I'm going to be here 6 weeks, and then I've done some other traveling, and then go home in September and look for a job, and I I'm a social worker, and I'll be looking for work, working with battered women or in a rape, such as, or rape crisis center. And I guess I'm going to change the topic a little bit because I'm a garbologist. And I guess when Dan asked me if I would speak on the panel, I did want to take the opportunity because I think that for many there's some irony in talking about garbage when, in fact, we're here to talk about the Jubilee. And I've thought about garbage a lot in the last couple weeks, and it fits very well, actually, for me that we would need to talk about waste and find a way that too needs to be joyful. And I will not lie and say that I dance about garbage, but that I do find pleasure in the work that I do at Holden. And I think when people find out that I'm the current garbologist, the question I'm asked the most frequently is, did you choose it? And yes, in fact, I did put it down as one of my preferences to deal with your garbage. And I think I found in my 2 weeks here that there's a couple things that we all kind of have in common. And one is that we want to have the privilege to produce garbage. And I know that because, you know, in the 2 weeks I've seen every pen and comb and cotton ball and light bulb and battery that's been thrown away in the village. And so I know that even as we come here to live what we consider a very simple life, we produce an incredible amount of garbage. And the second thing is that for most of us, we don't want to deal with that. We don't want to look at our garbage once we've created it, and we don't want to be confronted with the reality of the waste that we create. And I think it's more comfortable for us in our homes where many of us that live away from Holden, where we can just put it on the curb and someone else needs to deal with that waste. I think that being confronted with it is, particularly I think at a place as beautiful as Holden, when we're confronted with our garbage, it's uncomfortable and it's a bit embarrassing to see the truckload that we collect every single day here in this village, at least in the summertime. So I think that along with the tailings at Holden, garbology serves as a daily reminder of our impact on the earth here, on the earth, or sometimes our painful impact on the earth. But in turn, I think the beauty of Holden serves as a reminder that we must take garbology very seriously, and that it must be done with joy and with pride. And that when I'm up at the compost piles and I'm looking at the snow-capped mountains around us, or when I'm crossing the railroad creek after having emptied a compost bin, I'm just reminded of how serious it is that we take care of our garbage correctly. And I think that here at Holden, it's even more important in that we really have a lot of control over what happens to our garbage here, unlike places where we live and set it on the curb and someone else must sort it or do whatever they do with it. We know exactly what happens to it here, and we see every piece as it enters the village and as it leaves the village, and that it really is all on us to see that each piece gets composted or in the paper or whatever, so that we're reducing our waste as much as possible, so that what I see, the tie into the Jubilee, is just the piece of the reclamation of the earth. And I wouldn't argue that dealing with garbage reclaims earth, but I think it lessens our impact on the earth, and that for that we have a duty to take care of it and to confront it, and not be the one where, like I say, I feel like I have a job nobody wants to do, nobody wants to deal with, yet it's something we all need to confront and do well. And I think I would just suggest too, we need to take that back to our homes too, where we often talk of garbage collectors as the person that, oh, if you know, you don't go to school, you'll be a garbage collector. And we discount the very important work they do, and the work that's becoming more and more important, because if we can create a truckload of garbage here while we don't even buy anything, you know, what's happening in the homes where we're able to just, whatever out in the community, able to just walk into any store. So for me, I would just see my position as garbologist as really as an environmental issue. And when I do that, and when I think of it as my own personal way that I can impact the environment here at Holden or the larger environment, that's when I can see the joy in your garbage. So.
My name is Nancy Thorson. I am married to Eric, and we're from Montana. We too just quit our jobs. Our saying is we're 25, we need a sabbatical. And also, we've come up with a crass sort of statement that says unemployment isn't the problem, it's the solution. So, that's a harsh thing to say to people who are unemployed, not by their own choice. But I am a social worker, and the job that I just quit was working at a psychiatric hospital for kids and teenagers on a reservation in northwestern Montana. And when I tell people that that's what I did, they say, oh, that must have been hard. And that's the first common response. How did you do that? And I think that part of God's good gift to us is giving us different gifts. I couldn't deal with garbage. It makes me want to do something that I just don't like to do very much. Expels my lunch. All right. We're gifted in different ways, and I feel like working with emotionally disturbed children is a gift that I have. It's not as hard for me as it sounds like it must be for a lot of people. But to me, one of the things that causes jubilee and joy is taking care of oneself as a resource. And 2 years working where I worked was plenty. That was enough for the time being. I feel like I've been given a certain gift and I need to take care of that gift. And while I could have fun and joyful times with those children, it was draining after a while. So we started scheming about a year ago or a year and a half ago. What can we do to keep ourselves sane during the really rough times? And, well, we'll take a year off, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to go to Holden Village, then we're going to go to South America, you know, then we're going to play around, then we're going to go to grad school. And that was a vision that kept us going during the days that it was really hard. So my stance on jubilee is sort of a stewardship of the self in some ways, that we are best able to use our gifts and to give to our cause if we sustain ourselves. Sustainable living, which ties into the Sabbath, I think, that Dorothy was talking about. I've got some friends. I am 25, freshly out of, 3 years out of college, and I have some friends who are pow, bam, into the environmental movement or whatever it is, they are going full tilt. They're working 60, 80 hours a week. They're just out there, and I just cluck my tongue and say, what good are you going to do that cause if you can only do it until you're 30, and then you just have a heart attack or you just quit because you're so sick of it. My idea is for some sustainable giving and taking what gives you joy and doing some of that too and figuring out what that is. It even takes a while to slow down and think about what it is that you would want to do if you gave yourself some time. If you said, here's some time. So that's my take on jubilee lifestyle.
Hey, I'm Eric Thorson. I'm married to Nancy, as just stated. I have about 8 different ideas, and I don't know how to connect them.
A list works well
with that. Yeah, that would have been a good idea.
Pick one to start with.
Dorothy talked about the Sabbath law and how Lutherans don't have a good time with law, and I think that's right. I would put forth the idea that Sabbath and Jubilee could be looked on by Christians as vocation, something that we are called to. When I think we're called to something, I don't think of it as a law, as a command. I think of it as an invitation, as inspiration, as necessity. So that's one of the ideas. I think that this year off that Nancy and I are taking is an interesting experience in some ways, because we do talk about it sometimes as a vocation, as a Sabbath. It doesn't come after a 7-year period as the Orthodox Jewish law would have it, a sabbatical year. But it's It's just seemed to be the right thing to do before heading into the next stage of our lives, which will be graduate school and careers. So I would give that as an example of an inspiration or vocation of sabbatical or Sabbath that we've had. This kind of Sabbath, as Nancy has said, deals with self-maintenance quite a bit. We are improving ourselves and enjoying ourselves in various experiences. I also think that this experience of Sabbath or sabbatical and Jubilee is good for relationship. In our sabbatical, we are experiencing our relationship in new ways. I think yesterday during the Jubilee celebration, when it worked, it was fostering relationships in very good ways. That work creates certain kinds of relationships, but celebration seems to be the fruit of relationships. In a way, I mean, it's what really makes life worth living. It is the relationships we find in celebration. I think in some ways our Jubilee celebration and the relationships that were carried on as a result could have been improved if I'm sure it's going to be worked on. I work in the kitchen here at Holy Village, and it wasn't a Sabbath for everybody because it was a lot of work for us to have this celebration, and I do feel sad that we weren't able to attend Eucharist. That was a biblical idea I came up with today. One of Jesus' injunctions to us was when you hold a feast, invite the poor. That seems to connect to Jubilee in a way, but we at Holden Village have a very activist mindset, I think. We are hearing the poor in there pretty well, and I think we all feel guilt when we hear it. I wonder if that injunction could be heard better if we were to hear Jesus say, "When you invite the poor, give a feast." When I talk about the activist mindset, we all desperately want to do something for our sorry and broken world, and this often boils down to a lot of work, a lot of struggle, a lot of anger, a lot of argument and fighting, and whether it's carrying a sign or writing letters to Congress people. And as Nancy said about some of the activist friends we have, that burns people out. It isn't a sustainable way of life. It's going to war, and sooner or later you come back shell-shocked. What I thought of Jubilee yesterday was an alternate paradigm to activism, a way of life that puts celebration and justice in the same shoes and sets them walking.
Thank you. We're off to a good start. I'm sure there are things we could follow up on, the notion of free people being able to rest and rejoice and free people having agency to make a difference. This relationship being part of how we respond in our efforts for justice. When someone else gets justice, we all rejoice and can be part of that. But perhaps you'd like to just tell someone else about something you've learned to do that allows you to do justice and be joyous simultaneously, as Sven so wonderfully said a few things to us this evening about how he learns to be hospitable. Do you have things you do that help you do both together? You be both things at once, dear?
Yeah, I'm on the board of a parachurch organization called Liberation Community. One thing I've noticed in terms of how really to enjoy Thanksgiving, every Thanksgiving in particular, Liberation Community has a great feast, a Thanksgiving feast. A thing I've noticed is that the communion you can have with people on a day like that, in which a lot of people come together and will cook and serve poor people in a certain part of the country. But we don't just give them the food, we sit down and we eat with them, and we talk with them, and we share with them about Thanksgiving's past, perhaps Thanksgiving's to come. And when we live with them, and I go home, you know, on that Thanksgiving day, it's much better than I remember ever, you know, eating my mother's turkey and fighting with my brothers. The usual family type of thing. There's a richness there that, and the food is just as good too.
Yeah.
But somehow it tastes better. And I guess it tastes better because there doesn't seem to be such a breach. You see what I'm saying? And in eating with people who are really living on the edge of life and somehow sharing it with them in their struggle, I don't know, it gives me a sense of completeness that just sitting at home and trying to watch some crazy football game would not do. And then I serve on the board, of course, during the year. But that's just one occasion in particular that sticks out in my mind. And I've tried to build it into kind of a family tradition. And I've noticed my kids enjoy it. You know, it's not just me. But we do it as a family. And so it becomes kind of a new family tradition.
I'm really struck by in what Dorothy said, and in a sense is in what Daryl says, is that, and what you guys are saying too about activism is a recognition of limits. That one of the things that makes us grim and tired is feeling like everything is up to me. If I don't do it, the world won't all be changed. It's not going to get fixed. It's all my job. And that one of the things that Dorothy's saying is one day of the week, it's not my job. Or to say, you know, feeding these people a meal isn't going to change their lives on the other days, but it will today. And, you know, again and again, there's this sense of letting go of some of the work is a way to be able to do the other work with some enthusiasm and joy. Does that seem right to you?
Let me add a little bit about that. In Jewish tradition, and you'll notice this if you go to Easter Vigil, for instance, there are all the readings about that. It was the evening and the morning, the first day.
Yeah.
Days go from sundown to sundown. And there's all this folklore that says God is doing all the work without you for the first half of the day. In other words, during the darkness, God's out there growing the grass and, you know, running the water, cleansing the air and all that. And you just come and pitch in for the second half of the day. See, which is different from our culture kind of getting up and you work just as much, but it's how you think about it. you know, do you have to get the whole scene moving? And so it's a kind, so as we talk about limits, you know, where do we ground our sense of limit? Do we ground it in a notion of personal mental health, which is given to us by the psychotherapeutic profession? We ground it in an idea of creation, which has certain understandings about time and balance. You know, where do we, how do we decide how much is enough? Because there's always more to be done, right? And I guess a Sabbath helps me to try to ground it somewhere in a certain given pattern, you know, that reframes the whole of life and not just that day. In other words, and Abraham Heschel, one of the great Jewish philosophers, says the Sabbath cannot live alone amidst a week of profanity. Right? You can't not make a list if everything's going to fall away from you. You can't let go if you do, your servant's going to come in and knife you in the back. And you can't, right? You can't. You can only adjust.
Yeah.
Only being able to sleep can you let go in that way. Right? So it's a time of forgiveness and reconciliation, too.
This makes me think of one of my favorite evening hymns, "The Day You Gave Us, Lord, Has Ended," and the second and third stanza, "We thank you that your church unsleeping while darkness rolls onward into light, through all the world its watch is keeping and never rests by day or night. As to each continent and island, the dawn leads on another day. The voice of prayer is never silent, nor dies the strain of praise away." That sense, you're speaking about you need to have a just society so you can stop on one day and not be afraid, but also being able to let go of that day because someone else picks up the work.
Mm-hmm. No, that's
so that
true.
As we go to sleep, the Christians on the other side of the world pick up the prayer.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That there's this sharing that takes place. That when Nancy left her job, someone else took up the work.
We hope.
We hope. Because with Michelle leaves, someone else picks up the work.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's important.
Without the Sabbath rest, we often do the wrong thing. Or we do the right thing the wrong way. And a lot of the work of activists who work 7 days a week can be absolutely, let's say, vitiating to what others have attempted to attain, simply because they have not taken time to touch the eternal with rest. And Einstein, whenever he couldn't figure out a problem, would go to sleep. And it's been proven that the brain continues to work on the problem even though you're sleeping. And then he would awaken and he would have the answer. Not all the time, but very often. So sleep is something that's really probably in some ways, or rest, at times it's the most active thing to do, especially if we take time to have contact with the eternal.
I just had a thought. Yesterday, one of the Jubilee activities was to raise $1,500, was that the goal?
Yeah. We're closer to 3,000.
Right, yeah. Right. And the original goal was 1,500 for a single hectare of land in El Salvador to be given back to the people who work it. Is that correct?
Right.
To raise this money, there was in a festive atmosphere, a very lively a very vibrant, celebrative auction was held, in which people paid outlandish prices for things. And this thought just struck me: what if Someone had just walked into the dining hall one day and said, we'll be taking donations today to try to get $1,500 for a hectare of land in El Salvador. I don't think we would have even met the original goal. Instead, we almost doubled it.
And as I walk around the village today, people keep giving me money. It's quite amazing.
So you talked about us pump priming the discussion. I think that the celebration of Jubilee was a pump primer for that stewardship and that generosity. It was an entirely different atmosphere. I mean, because we were all being lavished with the goodness and happiness of the day. I mean, I think everyone could feel free to let go of the goods they had. And it was something about the attitude of celebration.
Brett, you look like you agree.
I had a good time.
Yes. Do you think Eric's logic is right?
Definitely I do. I was also thinking about the joyousness of justice. For me, is sort of what Daryl was saying, Daryl, right?
Yes. Yeah.
With being with someone rather than being for someone makes it all the more joyous for me.
Yes.
We don't always have that opportunity because we're often working for justice for people far removed. But if somehow we can be with rather than be for, it makes it all the more joyous.
So one practice then that we might think of is to make sure that in our for justice, at least part of it is with someone. Or if it's for, is at least for someone who's close enough that you're with in the same room. Earlier in the summer, we had a forum which we talked about hope in Africa. It was so interesting. All the hopeful stories were small scale. And as we reflected on that, we realized that it's the same in the United States. All the hopeful stories are the small scale ones, not the big ones. They're the ones that are with. It's my conviction that good Lutheran spirituality is not propositional, it's prepositional. It's all about the relationships in, with, and under the sacraments, but also finding Christ in the neighbor, doing things with people. People have experiences of that, doing something with someone that...
I haven't personally, but I think of the L'Arche communities.
Mm-hmm.
That's it appears
maybe
to
you
be...
could say more about that because maybe not everyone is familiar with
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm not an expert at all.
Yes, but you know something.
These are communities where people with, I believe it's mental disabilities, live together with people who do not have mental disabilities, and they set up community together and live together, share their lives. And there's usually, or there is work involved and wage earning for the people who are there. But just what I've seen, exposure, this looks like very joyous work. So that would be something in practice, I would think. And that's a with experience, a privilege. I think that would be a privilege to do that.
So I'm hearing several themes. One is the importance of rest for a couple reasons. Dorothy pointed to those two. One is that it's because we're like God, but also because God has freed us. Another is the importance of celebration, which is a different kind of change from work. And another is the importance of doing that together. That sharing is an important part of having a jubilee life that stays jubilant.
I think that perhaps, I've had a lot of conversations with my parents about this, but Generation X is our generation. It's people in their 20s or so, who have a heck of a time finding jobs. You know, people in my folks' generation could go to school and basically get a job wherever and start their career and kind of live, expect to earn more money than their parents did and have a bigger house and have more stuff. And that's just not our story right now. It's really tough when you're a fresh college graduate to find work. I worked at a group home for $5.25 an hour my first year out of Pacific Lutheran University. And that was sort of good because it was almost in my field. You know, my brother's been a waiter for 5 years with a Spanish degree. But the whole difference in setup is maybe because we can't expect to have everything that our parents had, we have to alter our paradigms a bit. And maybe because of that, people, a lot of our friends are not on a career track right now and are exploring other options and are thinking about, you know, either being in school forever and ever so that they never have to pay off their loans, or, you know, doing different volunteer experience, or just checking out for a while, or quite a few people I think are taking jobs that aren't necessarily big shot career jobs, are doing things like being waiters or waitresses or grocery store clerks or something, and then with their extra time they still want to find meaning and vocation, but since they can't get a job in that, are doing that sort of on the side. And I think there's a beauty to that, that, you know, it's a really hard time to be looking for a job and earning money, and our parents are setting up our IRAs for us and that kind of thing because they're fretting because we'll never have any retirement, you know. And there's a release in that that says people of our generation have looked at our folks and said, maybe we won't have the midlife crisis. Maybe we won't have the heart attack and stroke at a young age. Maybe we won't have a bitterness that says, well, I'm going to get to retirement and then I'll have my fun, because we have to have our fun now because we don't really have a job. So there's an attitudinal shift that can be very jubilant about a situation that at first is very depressing. I think we can find a lot of joy in our unemployedness or underemployedness, what have you.
I heard it called the advantage of disadvantage.
You find creative ways to live really cheaply. You know, have as many roommates as you can and all share a car or stuff like that. It winds up being good in a lot of ways for the environment, for people's pocketbooks.
I can recall a time when I was maybe just a little younger than the younger, our youngest panelists, when I was working on the farm with my parents, of course, and my father would always save some job for Sunday, particularly Sunday morning. The one that I disliked most was fixing the fence, and usually there's something to deal with the livestock on Sunday. So one summer, I said at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, I'm finished. The rest of the day is mine. So I could go to church and participate in that. And the same way as my recollection, I was keeping the books at that time, that we did better that summer than we had some time before. But anyway, after you've worked 7 days, and then another 7 days, you forget which day it is you're working, and the more you keep going. And so this rejuvenation has to take place. It may be in the form of rest, it may be visiting, it may be doing something else, but it's this break in the in what you have to do during the rest of the time. So that when you come back to it, it's always a little easier to get started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about Sunday and Sabbath, and what you're saying is close to my own experience. Do you know, though, that now half of the jobs in the U.S. economy are not Monday to Friday daytime jobs? And
They're
shift jobs. They're fast food in the evening. They're you're required to work on weekends sometimes. If you think of the biggest sectors of the economy, even industrial workers work shift work. But then you take healthcare is a huge sector, and service jobs of all kinds, retail. And now, I mean, they're talking about a stock market that stays open all the time, right? And the internet and all this stuff. I mean,
a lot of professional jobs don't end when you go home.
There's that too. So, but it probably would make the 50% that's 9 to 5. Job probably would, even though it isn't, right?
A pester isn't.
Well, there's some real justice issues here. You know, with certain people being shut out from work altogether. Right, and other people having to work several jobs because there's not a living wage, and some people doing very well but working really hard. I guess some people doing well not working so hard. You know, so these are real justice issues and real equity issues, and some spirituality writers now are saying, so we all need to just get into Sabbath time and take it when you can get it. And I suppose as a stopgap measure, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, if you only have, the early morning hours and you don't even have those on Sundays, well, then you take it and you try to use it for rest and so on. But I think there's almost more of this odd Christian, like Dan Erlander stuff, let's be weird, let's not fit the mold, that I think I'm trying to hold up for Sundays. As a kind of a resistance to the idea that even in our very small town there are two or three all-night stores, you know, and it all just gets into a cycle, which one sociologist calls the work and spend cycle. Work and spend, and work and spend more, and some people get put off this treadmill altogether, and others try harder and harder. And there's a certain thing about just insisting on a one day and seven, you know, that's kind of countercultural. That I'm kind of feeling is the more countercultural way to go than to say, let's set aside our prayer hour whenever we can. So.
Speaking of hours, we're getting close to the end of ours, and this is when I always say, if you're waiting for someone else to make your point, they're not going to. So take heart and say the thing you've been wishing somebody else would, if they're consent.
I know about 25 years ago, I worked for a welder. It was a small branch off of a large company in another state. And it was apparent that they weren't getting enough business, so they decided that they would pull their equipment back to the main branch in California. And something fortunate came out of that because I wasn't even done working for this welder when two different farmers approached me about coming to work for them. And I asked questions of their friends about how they work for. And the one that lived right close by was a real workaholic. He worked all the time. The other one we would have to move, so it wasn't so attractive. I told this gentleman that was living close to us that if I went to work for him, I would have Sundays off. And I told him how many hours I would expect to work the rest of the week. And he said, you think about it. And my friend said, you were crazy. You will never get a job that way. It's not going to work. Well, it did. Mm-hmm. He respected my request. And I worked there 3 years, and he treated me as his son. Mm-hmm. So it paid for me to work by my express my convictions. And then see where things would fall.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't as good as Dorothy that I didn't spend money on Sundays, because when you head in to town only once a week, no. That's where you spend your money.
Yes.
It's that. My students learned not to move a muscle unless they want to talk. But it looked like you were thinking about whether you wanted to raise your hand.
No.
Okay.
Well, partly that's Jewish tradition, but partly I chose that because that was my own sense of where my own sin resides. You know, wanting more stuff. I decided to cut it off the past. You know, and other people might have other issues.
Well, we grew up in a culture that where everything was closed on Sunday.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So Nobody thought they had to get it.
Right. No, that was my own resistance to my consumerism. It's not, I would want to say I don't see any of this as law. I think it's a practical matter of figuring out what for you and your community, not just individually, is liberating. If it feels free, you know, if it is liberating, you can tell. If it's not, if it becomes bondage, then you try again. You adjust, you fine-tune, you whatever.
Last words, maybe not. Oh, thank you for helping us think together about really an important thing, which is how we can live lives like Christ and share in the joy that we're admonished to have in Him. So, thank you.
Thank you.